Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Amira Enya, Doug Ibendahl, Nick Kacharubis, and Dave Lundy. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you'd like to join me on the web, obviously, if you want to tweet me a comment, you can tweet me at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And again, if you want to join us on the World Wide Web, it's beyondthebeltway.com. There are 29 days to go before Iowa, 309 days to go before Election Day. And again, as we will begin 2016, virtually every week talking about the campaign, let's take a look at the latest in the Republican primary battle. This is the real clear politics, the latest thing they've done. There's not too much polling done over the holidays. But Donald Trump remains in first place at 35%. Ted Cruz, 19.5%. Marco Rubio, 11.5%. Ben Carson at 8.5%. Again, big shakeup in the Ben Carson campaign. That's not likely to go too much further. Again, 35, 19.5, 11.5, and 8.5. for the Republicans. And again, Hillary Clinton with a big lead nationally for the Democrats over Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley. One of the things I want to talk about tonight is an issue that has been dominating the news this week, and that is Bill Clinton and whether or not he will or will not be an issue in this campaign. Donald Trump has said that he is going to be a woman in the campaign if Hillary continues to use the war on women card or the sexist card against Donald Trump. Do you think that's fair, Amira Enya?
That it's fair to use the card or for...
Both.
Well, I think her using the card, I mean, that's one of the strong suits of her campaign. Frankly, I would question if she didn't play up the fact that she is the woman, the woman, at least on the Democratic side in the race. So it's to be expected. Fair or no fair, I think it's to be expected.
Is it fair to also look at the record of her husband as it relates to his relations with other women?
It's fair game only because the situations with Bill Clinton happened. Whether or not the situations, his indiscretions should have any bearing on her ability to lead as president, I don't even think that the comparison can be made. But since it's in the public sphere, it's going to come up.
Doug Ibendahl, you represent Donald Trump. You're a supporter. You're not officially here for the campaign, but you're a supporter of Donald Trump. Donald Trump has raised this issue. Is this an issue he's going to continue to talk about, or do you think he's already fired the shot and maybe he may be forcing Hillary Clinton to sort of back off on some of those charges?
I think that's right, Bruce. I agree with that. I think it was largely a shot across Hillary's bow, letting her know that she's going to keep playing the woman card or whatever you want to call it, that he'll be talking more about Bill Clinton. But Bill Clinton is not going to go away from this campaign in some form or another. I mean, Amar is very gracious in saying that, referring to his experiences, indiscretions. I mean, let's be honest. He's a sexual predator, and a lot of people would say, including myself, that Hillary, to a large degree, enabled that behavior. She's an enabler. I think it is a legitimate issue. And it's not going to go away. Bill Clinton wants to get back in the White House for four more years at least.
Dave Lundy is a Democrat. Dave, is this an issue that needs to be discussed? And are you surprised that it's being discussed?
I'm not remotely surprised it's being discussed. But first I want to start with this notion that Hillary is, quote, playing the woman card. She is a woman. That is a fact.
Right. Which is a card that you don't have to play then.
Well, you don't have to play. She would be the first woman president.
Yeah.
I think anybody kind of knows that
if you know
her name is Hillary and who she is.
Right.
So I think this idea, and this is classic Trump, and I know Doug and I are going to have fun tonight, but This is classic Trump. What Donald likes to do and has done extremely effectively in this race is scare the bejesus out of anybody who might dare cross him. And so he throws these shots across the bow. Like he said, he's going to spend $2 million a week, but it could be a lot more if he's attacked, if anybody attacks him. So, and then, you know, somebody attacks him and he goes after them full force. It's very effective what he's doing. And he's trying to do that with Bill Clinton on this and trying to somehow make Hillary afraid of mentioning that she's a woman or the fact that, I mean, what's so amazing about this attempt on Donald Trump's part is Donald Trump is a serial womanizer who cheated on spouse one with spouse two and spouse two with spouse three.
Wait a second. That's,
let's let him finish.
Sorry, that's the, you're going to tell me.
Let's go ahead.
And so if Donald Trump wants to play that game and he wants to go down that road, I would encourage him to do so. I think that I think he's going to find that Hillary Clinton is not quite a soft target as Jeb Bush.
But would you acknowledge, though, that the issue here, at least as far as I'm concerned, is not so much about what Bill Clinton did. It's the role that Hillary Clinton played in castigating the women, many women, who came forward against him in not only when he was in Arkansas, but when he was running for president. You know, the part of his comeback in New Hampshire was that she went and she stood by her man, although she was going to be no Tammy Wynette. That's what made her famous on 60 Minutes. So it brings up these issues, especially and the thing that the juxtaposition, which again is something that let me make my point first. It's the Bill Cosby situation. And I say that because of this reason. Donald Trump, to me, has been amazing in that he's said outrageous things, and then things happen in the world over which he has no control that sort of feed a narrative, whether it's, you know, Kate Steinle being murdered, you know, by an illegal immigrant. There are things that happen in the world, or Paris or San Bernardino. They happen and they sort of feed his narrative. Now, here's a guy, Bill Cosby, who is charged with a sexual crime, I think, we'll know that, or the judge will, or jury will decide that. But this happened years ago, and there were pictures of all of the women who've accused Bill Cosby. I mean, I can see a graphic of all the women that have accused Bill Clinton of, in one case, with Juanita Broderick, was rape. It wasn't just an indiscretion. It wasn't just, you know, sexual, a BJ in the White House. It was rape.
If Bill Clinton were running for president, that's totally fair game. He's not running for president.
But did Hillary Clinton enable him, as Doug has said, which, again, that's a debatable point. But here's one thing. If you're part of a team and you're going out to smear women who've made a charge, should she be out smearing the women that are making charges against Bill Cosby? Nick, I want to get you into this conversation.
Yeah, I want to make a couple comments, not necessarily about that, but I think it will be interesting to watch how this pans out, at least from a observer perspective, because I do think it's fair game. Bill Clinton was a public figure. This was very public. She is now a public figure, but on the other hand of things, is Bill Clinton, you know, was successful in not being impeached or not being removed from office, but he's also the most popular Democratic speaker out there. And Trump isn't wrong. You know, it'll be an interesting dialogue to watch happen to see who can really muster, because I don't think Trump's wrong for playing that card, but I think it opens Trump's personal life up for,
exactly.
If he's going to play it, it's going to open it up.
No, definitely, as well it should. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Excuse me, Chad. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago?
Apologies, CGO was having some issues, so I was on the phone with their guy and trying to wrangle up a solution here. So we're good now, but sorry about that. I missed the bump music.
Go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8290. I understand that we're having some technical problems along the network line this evening, so we apologize. We're trying to bring those up today. But again, if you're watching us on the World Wide Web, the World Wide Web, beyondthebeltway.com, radio, television, it's all together in one big spot. So if you ever miss us on your favorite radio station, we are here. But again, if you're listening to us on radio, stay right where you are, including POTUS, the POTUS channel on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, which is where you heard the show last week. My question to you, let's go back to the issue of what is a viable issue. Do you think that Donald Trump did this just you said that it was sort of masterful because he's dominated the media. Do you think he's going to stick to it, or if somebody comes back, she's not going to come back and talk about his ex-wives and what he was and his adultering past? Is Bill Clinton not going to talk about it? Who's going to talk about it?
No, not at all.
You're going to talk about it. Democrats are going to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, look, if the Republicans want and if Trump wants to make an issue about Bill Clinton's presidency, I would encourage them to do so. Because last time I checked, people had a pretty strong feeling about the 90s as an era of peace and prosperity. If they want to go there, go there. I welcome it. And so the idea that Democrats are fearful of this is crazy. I mean, look, Bill Clinton got off his game in 2008 with yeah. Barack Obama, clearly was. I don't think that's going to happen again. And he's not the issue. This is not what this campaign is going to be about, nor should it be what this campaign is about.
Doug.
Bruce, I think it was – I'm pretty sure it was you that made the point several months ago or made the comparison, the Bill Cosby, Bill Clinton comparison. And I remember at the time I sort of discounted that.
Yep.
But, you know, you're really onto something there. That is a very valid comparison, and Bill Cosby's back in the news again. He's been criminally charged. It is a reminder, and as you said before, Hillary – I followed that very closely back then. Hillary Clinton was part and parcel of that effort to destroy those women who came forward. That is a very serious thing, and that is why there are a lot of women out there.
There were people also. There were people on the campaign staff who were responsible for bimbo eruptions.
Exactly,
it was a division of the campaign. That's all they focused on was hammering down the women that
primary colors. Up. I know it was fictional and anonymous, but let's face it, in some ways a very accurate depiction of that Clinton campaign. And that is why there are a lot of women out there who do not like Hillary Clinton, and they are not all Republicans. There are a lot of strong women out there who say Hillary Clinton is not the kind of woman, is not represent who I am. Someone who has worked hard and got where she is on her own merits.
But I think Trump will bring this into the conversation more and more because it's something that he can bring in. And he has had this ability to see weakness, kind of like a dog does. And if Hillary and Bill are not comfortable talking. I mean, I don't know. I won't say not comfortable, but don't want to talk about it.
Well, of course not.
He's going to jump on it. And partly because, and I agree with Doug. I mean, if you look at the Clinton presidency, for a lot of policy-related issues, it was an era of prosperity. Now, we can argue whether that was due to Republican Congress or things like that. But Trump hasn't come out with a lot of policy – well, what I would call tangible policy proposals.
Nor will he.
And yet this allows him to stay in that media spotlight, not spend money in advertising.
See, I think part of the downside here is it speaks to sort of Trump's hypocrisy because, again,
absolutely.
You know, he invited them to the wedding. Okay, they play golf. He wrote big checks to the Clinton Initiative. I mean, you know, he's referred to them as wonderful people, right? So, I mean, he looks like a hypocrite if all of a sudden he comes back and says, this guy is he's the scum
and
of the world.
I just don't think it's a strong issue. I don't think it's a strong enough thing to hang his hat on is something to dig at Hillary Clinton. I don't think so at all. In fact, all it does is really open him up to increased scrutiny on his divorces and his past relationships that he probably won't want
but
to.
One of the other things he did is he set up the battle between himself and Hillary Clinton. I mean, everyone else is scrambling to try to win the Republican primary. He's already moved to the main event in his mind.
It serves both him and Hillary
well,
at the exact same time.
They need each other at the moment.
Hillary is delighted to be debating with Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is delighted. It helps Donald Trump in the Republican primary. It helps Hillary in the Democratic primary.
Look, Monica Lewinsky and the bimbo eruptions and all that – We're still in the Republican primary season, and it's a very big issue. It absolutely resonates with Republican voters.
But I think it's
voters.
Just the way – I think that this is a distraction from the fact that Trump, as charismatic as he may be presented, is really light on policy. If you actually listen to his interviews, if you listen to him speak on the issues, he sort of blows off very significant questions of policy. And so these things, calling up the Clinton's past or making derogatory comments about journalists – they serve as a distraction from the real issue, which is that there's very little substance there.
Look at his website, DonaldJTrump.com, and look at his issues page. He actually has a lot of specifics on there. He talks a lot about the veterans. I mean, obviously, immigration reform. Second Amendment, there's actually a lot on there.
Are they palatable?
There's actually a lot.
The thing I want to say, I think a better argument for Trump would be this argument, and he's talked about a little bit, but not as much as the argument about Bill Clinton, is whether this is a third term for Obama or a third term for Bill Clinton. I think that is a good policy debate, and some of us at this table may be on different ends on whether that would be a good thing or not, but I think that's a strong argument.
I don't see Trump making that argument. I see other Republican candidates making that argument, but I don't see Trump making
it. Is there anybody at this moment – I want to go just ask Dave. Are you in your heart, are you chomping at the bit to run against Donald Trump?
Yes.
Okay. So you think if Donald Trump is the nominee, it's a slam dunk. It's cold water all over.
No, I don't think it's a slam dunk, but I think that when you look at the 6 months of Trump, okay, what you see is a candidate who keeps raising the level of astonishingly nasty statements.
I mean,
he says more and more outrageous things because he needs to in order to continue to drive that dialogue and to monopolize the media. And it works. It's worked for him. It's working for him in the primary. But here's the thing. We're not talking about a subset of a subset of the Republican Party. We're talking about the American people, and we're talking about an election that you're going to have 110 to 120 million people voting in, including an awful lot of people that he has said horrifically derogatory things about. And so I think that the great thing about American elections, a lot of people hate the length of the American election cycle, and you've heard me say this before. American election cycle being so long is why we never had a President Perot. And it's why I think we will never have a President Trump, because the longer he goes and the more you see exactly what you were talking about, which there's no there. And you, Doug, you're absolutely right. There's lots of substance on his website, but he doesn't know what's on his website, as he demonstrated about a month ago in a debate when he accused, I forgot whoever the moderator was, of lying and saying things that weren't true when, in fact, it was on his own website.
Dave Lundy is sounding exactly what I would expect. This is exactly what I would expect from a Hillary Clinton supporter. Someone who is supporting a candidate who is under federal investigation by the FBI over this email scandal and could conceivably be indicted before this thing is over. That is exactly what I would expect. And when I hear a Democrat saying, "Oh yeah, bring us," I really want to run against Donald Trump. Someone who wants to run against Donald Trump does not out there every day attacking Donald Trump. Just like I don't attack Bernie Sanders because I want to run against him.
I want to get your reaction. Do you think Donald Trump is a pushover?
I don't think Donald Trump is a pushover at all. As a candidate, I think he has really surpassed even my expectations as far as how he would have exploded on the scene. But I also understand why he has gained such popularity. But I don't underestimate him, especially not at this point. But I also simply don't see him as being not only not fit for the position, but even being able to win the presidency overall. He might do well in the primaries on the Republican side, but overall, I don't see that at all.
You don't think he brings out people that have never voted?
I don't know.
Or he brings out people that may not have voted since Ross Perot. I think there's a core of Ross Perot's voters, which represented about 19% in 92, that they never voted for Bush, they never voted for Clinton. They haven't voted maybe for 20 years.
I think he brings out perhaps those voters who have not voted in a long time, I think he resonates with them. But I don't see him bringing out a new electorate that would drastically change the landscape enough for him to win the presidency.
Yeah, I think the one thing I've said ad nauseum on the history of this show, I've always talked about, you know, the 10%, you know, both parties, they ended up with 45% at the end of the conventions. I'm not so sure that either Hillary or Trump start with 45% of the vote. I think they may be closer, starting with maybe 20, 40% each. So I think the undecided voter, the votes that you got to fight for and claw for, actually may be a larger pool and bring in all kinds of people. Nick?
I was just going to tie into something, Dave. It's been interesting, the Trump – I'll call it the Trump phenomenon, the way he's been able – I mean, I think most of us would say he wouldn't have made it this far, but he has. And it will be interesting if he wins the nomination. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping to see how looking at it, how that plays with the American public. I would think that we're looking at a small faction, but, you know, that phenomenon has pushed him ahead more than any of us would have thought before. So it will be interesting if that is what is to come.
I invited Amara. You should really go to a – I've been to one when Trump was in Illinois at Springfield, the only time – the big event he had in Springfield a month or two ago. I'd really invite you to go to a Trump rally or watch one, you know, just look one up on YouTube. I'm not a youngster. I'm in, you know, early 50s now. I've never seen anything like this, someone bringing out the kind of people he is. And I would say that these poll numbers actually underestimate his support, because there are going to be people voting in these Republican primaries who are not reflected in these calls.
I agree with that. I think there are people that are ashamed to say to a pollster that they're for Donald Trump.
Well, they're not Republican voters, so they're not being
called.
Or
they're not Republican. I'm just saying that whatever it is, the social stigma of saying that you're for Trump in certain circles, in large urban areas.
That's bullying.
I think it's the reverse Bradley effect, I think. Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight, we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair, see Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King. Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Let's go to calls. Let's go to Scott, who is listening to us tonight in St. Augustine, Florida, and he's listening on the Internet. Go ahead, Scott.
Yes, Bruce. You brought up something earlier about Hillary Clinton being part of a smear campaign against people that brought up charges or allegations about Bill. And I think what Donald Trump's doing is setting the table for later on, because Hillary's already said people should be believed if they bring up allegations of sexual assault. And I think what Trump does is he throws an idea out there, lets people step into the mud, and then he jumps down in there with them. Mitt Romney was unwilling and unable in 2012 to get down in the ditch and fight with people. Trump is not that way. I think Trump will slaughter Hillary Clinton in an election, and I think she's going to have a far harder road than she believes with him, because he is a fighter.
Well, there's no question about that he will bring a dynamic to a general election campaign, just as he's brought a dynamic to a he has broken the Ronald Reagan speak no ill of Republicans like a million times already. And so he's setting a new standard for running for office.
Yeah,
Take no prisoners.
He's also broken the previously unwritten rules about, you know, calling Mexicans rapists and saying that Muslims should not be allowed in the United States. But look, you know, Doug earlier said
are a lot of people who believe that. And right after he said it, bad
his polls went up.
No question. His polls in the Republican primary went up. No question about it.
I think they went up with independences too, but we can argue about it.
Right. But the point I would make, and this is in response to the caller and in response to Doug, who thinks that really I'm worried about Donald Trump, I just think that he keeps setting new standards for outrageous things. And the more he says, the more I want to expose what he says, because he is the Republican standard bearer. And he's, in my opinion, most likely to be the nominee of the Republican Party.
What is outrageous about saying that some people, that some of the people coming here illegally, which is what he said, that some of them are bad people doing bad things? What is outrageous about saying that?
He said some of them are probably good people.
He did not say that all Mexicans were rapists and criminals.
I didn't say that.
You're trying to imply.
But whatever. Oh, go ahead. Look, finish your point.
Look,
then we're gonna go.
Every week that goes by, I mean, the Vladimir Putin thing. When confronted with stupid things that he says, okay, and he owned the Vladimir Putin endorsement, and he appreciated it, and when questioned about, well, but Vladimir Putin's killing journalists, his response was, well, we kill a lot of people too. Are you kidding me? This is not a person who is going to be elected to the presidency of the United States.
That's a misrepresentation of what
he
said.
It's not a misrepresentation.
You know, for somebody who's not worried about Trump, you seem these hysterical attacks. You seem very, very
there
worried.
You seem very worried about Donald Trump.
Even the fact that there are, whether they're misrepresentations or not, language matters and speech matters, especially when we're talking about the president of the United States of America. And so when you make a statement that even comes across as saying that Mexicans are rapists, it's problematic, or that all Muslims are horrible people, it's problematic. Even if the appearance that
he didn't say that all Muslims were horrible.
No, I'm not saying that he's saying that, but I'm saying that the lack of the careless language that he uses, where he can toss things out and then leave it to the public to decipher what he actually said, that's also problematic, because again, we're dealing with other presidents of other countries. We're dealing with foreign entities. And so when it comes to diplomacy, when it comes to being able to for the United States to have stature on the world stage, those things do have an effect.
I get your point. I respect your point on that, Amara. I know what you're saying. But this is a competence election. People are looking for competence. Trump is doing well because people see that he has accomplished something. And a lot of people are saying, you know what, being president, a lot of it is about negotiating. It is about diplomacy and working with people. So why not elect the guy who literally wrote the book on negotiation? That is Donald Trump. The Art of the Deal is literally the book on negotiation. And most people get it. I can see why, you know, Democrats are terrified of this guy.
Because running a country is not the same as running a corporation or a business. And we are learning that in Illinois. We've certainly learned that in Chicago.
Well, I definitely agree with you on that.
Well.
I definitely agree with you on that. But please do not make, you're a very smart person. That's a very good point to make. But please do not compare him to Bruce Rauner.
Thanks very much, Scott. Thank you very much
for
your call. We do appreciate it. I want to spend at least a few minutes talking about some of the nuts and bolts about things that you'll be hearing about throughout 2016. But we're going to give you a little primer tonight. And by the way, we should mention that if you have gone or have not gone to the beyondthebeltway.com website, you can go to that website and there's a campaign 2016 primer. I mean, it's a great book. It was done by our good friend Nick Ketcharubas from DePaul University, and it has all kinds of it's the election process. It gives you dates. It gives you a variety of things. You can download it. It's yours free of charge, beyondthebeltway.com. It's a good thing to have, and you can reference it maybe as part of the homework you do before tuning in every Sunday night. But a couple of basic numbers. Republicans, they're having their convention in Cleveland. And you need 2,470 delegates to be at hand. You need a total of 1,236 to win the Republican nomination. And then there's types of delegates, and I want Nick to talk a little bit about them. There's at-large delegates, there's congressional districts, and there's RNC members. Take us, what are the types of delegates. Sure. So what does it mean?
So the way the 2,270 delegates, which is the total number of delegates that can vote at the Republican mm-hmm. National Convention, are split up is there's three types of delegates. They all have the same voting power, but how they get to the convention is mm-hmm. a little different. The most common type are what we call district delegates, which are come from congressional districts. So every mm-hmm. state that has congressional districts, each congressional district is allotted three delegates to the Republican National Convention. Mm-hmm. And then the at-large delegates, each state is allotted 10 at-large delegates. And those at-large delegates are represented by the whole state.
Whether it's a big state or small state.
Big state or small yeah. state. And then there are three RNC members, which are the members, the state party members.
Republican National Committee.
Republican National Committee, the chairman of the party, the Republican committee woman, and the Republican committee man. Now, an interesting thing regarding those at-large delegates and the RNC delegates is under the new rules is though if a presidential preference vote is taken in the state or territory and whatever candidate receives the majority of that vote, those for the first time those people are bound to that person's to that person.
So that gets into the specific allocation of delegates.
Correct.
And when you're allocating the delegates, there's proportional. There is winner take all, and there's some that happens, I think, earlier in the season than later in the season. And then there's hybrid states. What is the difference between proportional? Proportional means that everybody can walk away from an election night with something, right?
Yeah, and that happens in most of the states, particularly the early states and the congressional districts. Delegates are elected per delegate, at least in a primary election. So Trump may have three people on the ballot in a congressional district. Bush may have three. And you know, because Bruce, you're so popular, they would vote for you over the candidate that your name's attached to. But you're still bound to that candidate.
I should have run for something.
I'd vote for you.
Those are based on the actual vote in the district. The at-large delegates, those folks, they are bound if a presidential preference vote happens, and it's all or nothing on those.
Right.
And so if Trump were to win 55% of a vote or even 40%, but no other candidate was high enough, then all of those 10 or basically 13 members of the RNC members and the at-large would be Trump delegates. And that's a new rule that they're trying out this time.
And what's a hybrid state?
Now that refers to the type of primary, which I didn't get into, but the hybrid states is, you know, people that or states that allow people that didn't vote in a Republican primary in the past election cycle that aren't a registered Republican to in this election vote as a Republican.
So if you go to Cleveland and you're close, but you're not to 1236, the wheeling and dealing, in other words,
you have a brokered convention.
You have a brokered convention, but at a brokered convention, can a candidate, let's say someone who finishes second or third, let's say it's Marco Rubio or Mike Huckabee, whoever, they go by just saying publicly, I'm releasing my delegates to vote for, let's say, Donald Trump or Ted Cruz, just by saying it, they're not legally bound to follow the suggestion of their candidate, are they?
Absolutely not. So in these early states, if Ted Cruz gets some delegates and then he decides to withdraw later, though, and he might say, well, I endorse Trump or I endorse Rubio, his delegates that were duly elected to support him don't have to go where he wants them to go. They become essentially free agents. And so, again, the key number and the big thing is who has 1,236 votes? And if you've got those 1,236 votes, you become the nominee. How you get them? Well, that's
so
the process.
A person who's hovering at it's another reason why someone should maybe stay in the race a little bit longer, because they may be going with 300 or 400 delegates or even 100 delegates, and that could be they could be a kingmaker. Would you like to be a kingmaker?
Sure, I'd be happy.
Vice president.
sounds like a plan. I have got a real job. Sorry. no, I think it's a fascinating how this is going to play itself out, and you know, every 4 years everybody talks about a brokered convention, and every 4 years, you know, the people are just smoking crack. It's never, it's not going to happen. this year, maybe kind of, sort of. You could see there are Ted Cruz
in the Republicans.
Yeah. Because, if Ted Cruz wins Iowa, which would be my guess.
In fact, when we come back, let's go through that. Because that when we come back in the next segment, we're going to take you first through the first 3 or 4 months of the campaign. And we'll talk a little bit about that and also take your calls. 1-800-723-8029. We're having a primer tonight on Campaign 2016. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
Excuse me, Chad, here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8029. Also, if you want to send me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. We're going to quickly go over the calendar, at least for the first couple of months, because, again, we're not going to spend the rest of the show just going over the calendar. But obviously, as everybody knows, the first big race is going to be on February 1st. That's the caucus in Iowa. And this is the Republican calendar. They've got 30 delegates at stake. And then 8 days later in New Hampshire, it's the primary, 23 of delegates up there. Then they head south to South Carolina, always a pivotal. That's a Saturday. That's the primary with 50 delegates. And then on the 23rd of February, there's the Nevada caucus also, which is emerging as an important caucus. So as you look at those four states, I could make a case that you're not going to have the same winner in all four states.
I agree. I think that's very, very much a possibility. And you didn't 4 years ago and 8 years ago.
But you know what I would say in looking at that? I don't see a state here in – I'm just talking February now. Mm-hmm. I don't see a state here that Jeb Bush wins. I don't see a state that Marco Rubio wins. I see a state that either Ted Cruz or Donald Trump wins. Maybe there could be a surprise in New Hampshire, but that's sort of the way I say it. Does anybody disagree or have strong opinions about that?
I will say that, again, in 2008, John McCain came in fourth in Iowa and ended up being the nominee. A third or fourth in Iowa may play a role.
But New Hampshire rejects Iowa.
Yeah, usually.
And if I was Donald Trump, I wouldn't spend 1 second in Iowa, and yet he's spending – allegedly, he's going to spend a couple million dollars a week on advertising.
He could conceivably win. I agree not giving up in Iowa, but I do agree that at least recently New Hampshire has shown that they take pride in not following Iowa's lead.
Right, and Christie seems to be between surging, Christie and Rubio, and I don't know where Bush. Bush was on television
Who?
Today. It really, he really has become a pathetic figure.
From my analysis, just quickly, of and again, these are just most recent elections, is you have to come in first and second in at least three of those races,
right.
and then you're pretty solid. You don't have to be necessarily first in all three of them, but you have to come in first in probably two of them, and you may, you could be third in one of them.
You got to win, place, or show in all of them, I would think.
What we're really saying is it is possible that there is no establishment figure, that you wind up with the competitors to the nomination, Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, period, and that's it.
And then the Democrats would have their dream ticket, Trump and Cruz. Trump would absolutely never run as a vice president.
Right.
Ted Cruz could run as a vice president.
Well, but they've gotten along.
And then I know they get along.
We'll see how long that lasts.
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine when Vice President Ted Cruz, if he ever walks in the Senate, where he presides over the Senate, where he's called the majority leader a liar? Can you imagine what a day that will be?
This is another case where actually I agree with Dave. I agree with you on this, that I think it's very possible, becoming increasingly more likely, that this long-awaited establishment pick may never emerge. It may not be.
Someone will, because Cruz or Trump are going to finish, perhaps, in all likelihood, one or two. So someone is going to finish third. Mm-hmm. The person that finishes third two or three times in a row suddenly becomes, that when you get to the big day. By the way, let's go to the next big day. The next big day is on March 1st, a huge day. You got a lot of primary. They call it the SEC primary. And I'm going to go through them quickly because, again, to the people on radio, this may be a little bit boring. But it's Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, Colorado, Georgia, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Vermont, and Virginia. And again, a lot of delegates on that day. And by the way, as I look at this list, that seems to be, again, of those that are running, it seems to me that it would be Trump or Cruz. Those seem to be states sort of ripe for Cruz and or Trump. I don't see, you know, I don't see where a Jeb Bush breaks through in, you know,
maybe
Texas.
Marco Rubio. A comment about Super Tuesday, March 1st, yeah. Just from a nuts and bolts standpoint, on that date alone, there are 632 delegates up for election or selection, which represents 51% of what you need to get the nomination. So it's a big day.
Well, and here's what's interesting. When you think about this, you know, everybody focuses on Iowa, New Hampshire, and of course there are no real delegates there. Iowa, New Hampshire, and really the entire month of February is about bragging rights. The entire month of February is about momentum. It's about perception. It's not about delegates. March is where the delegates really play.
Oh, yeah.
Really
correct. Yeah. And then, by the way, after that March 1st, we'll quickly go through this. On March 5th, you have Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, and Maine. Then on the 6th, you've got Puerto Rico, the Puerto Rican primary. On March 8th, it's Hawaii, Idaho, Michigan, always a big one, always big in Michigan. They've got 59 delegates. Mississippi. On March 12th, it is the District of Columbia. Again, not very important in the Republican primary. And then you get to the other really big day, and that is March 15th. That is the second biggest day. The biggest day is March 1st, and then there's March 15th. Beware of the Ides of March, because
exactly
you've got Florida and Illinois and Missouri and North Carolina and Ohio and the Marina Islands, and then the Virgin Islands on the 19th, and then finishing up the month on the 22nd, you've got Arizona and Utah. But again, you look at March 15th, I mean, that's if there's an establishment candidate that can stay alive March 15th, they might have, because again, you've got Florida, although in Florida, Trump is beating. I mean, to me, if I'm Bush and I'm Rubio, and I wake up and close my eyes and say, you know what, I'm not going to be president. I want to be out of the race. I don't want to be embarrassed in Florida.
I don't know that things will change very much as far as momentum. I don't know that things will change very much even as we continue, whether March 1st, March 15th, or even in February. And so if I were the establishment candidate or considered myself to be the establishment candidate from the Republican side, I'd be very concerned if I didn't finish in a respectable place early on. Because the longer it goes...
But respectable is third.
It's third because I don't see them...
You got to show. You may not win or place, but you got to show at some point.
You've got to show in all of those early places.
A quick comment about March 15th. That's the first date that 1,236 delegates have been up for vote. Wow. So if somebody were to win everything up until March 15th, they could theoretically take the nomination on that date.
Well, but again, I would say that March 15th is the day that the establishment is either going to be totally gone or back in the game. Back shortly, we'll continue our discussion.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, City Walk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com. Or mayor of the city of Chicago, and are you going to want to do that again maybe someday?
The door is definitely open. The door is
it is.
Open.
There's a lot of people that want to push the current mayor through that
door.
Yeah,
the dynamics in Chicago have shifted, just especially over the last couple of months. I think people are waking up to the leadership qualities that we want in the city, and unfortunately it took very tragic circumstances to do that, but there are a lot of problems, and we need a problem solver, and I'm always up for that challenge.
Yeah. Nick Kacharubas also joins us. He is with DePaul University. He has authored this great primer that we're making available on beyondthebeltway.com, and Doug Ibendahl joins us, and Doug is a supporter of Donald Trump, but you were not there from the get go.
I was not. Actually.
What was it that he said that said that's my guy?
Well, he did win.
Which of his outrageous statements turned you on?
No. He actually did win me over. Actually, I'm also not very impressed by the mostly weak field, but otherwise, but. Really, I really came to his defense. Probably not just what he says and his record of accomplishment, but it's really the over the top attacks, the hysterical over the top unfair attacks, and that's kind of my nature, coming to someone's defense when they're being unfairly attacked, even if it's a multi billionaire. I mean, I can see what's going on here, but what we've gotten Trump is something we've never had in our lifetime, an insurgent candidate with the courage to fight. You know, that's what Phyllis Schlafly talked about. That she gets it. Mm-hmm. She's not used to seeing that on the, you know, from a conservative, especially right. In Illinois. It's very unusual, and that's why he stood up to this. And in the past, you know, whether it was, you know, Sarah Palin or Herman Cain, insurgent candidates have been easily, you know, just tossed aside. Donald Trump stands up for himself, and these old players don't like it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to switch gears and talk about some of the other candidates, because as I have said over the last several weeks or months on this program, to me, there's only three people who can be elected president of the United States. I said Hillary Clinton, obviously. I've said Donald Trump, and I've said Marco Rubio. Now, I'm not ready right at this moment, but I may be very soon ready to pull Marco Rubio's name off that list. He looks good in the debates. I don't think his commercials are terribly effective. I think he is the best of the establishment lot. I think he is the one that, at least when I talk to Democrats, that's the one they fear the most because of the generational appeal that he has. But he doesn't seem to be really taking off. Does anybody disagree with that or agree with that?
I completely agree, and I'm a little bit surprised and a little bit disappointed, actually. I thought Rubio would take off after maybe the second debate. I mean, he presents very well in his interviews. He knows the issues.
Never stutters.
Exactly. Never stutters. He has appeal across demographics. From my standpoint, he was actually the strongest out of the field, so I'm a little bit disappointed to see that
I'm biased, obviously. I've got a dog in this hunt, but I see Marco Rubio as a lightweight. I mean, he's a lightweight, and yes, he's articulate on that, his first talking points when he first answers a question. Yeah, he's very smooth, he's very practiced, but you scratch a little bit, and it falls apart. It is not there. But more importantly, he's not showing up to the job he currently has. Who Republicans? I mean, all these business
Doug, please. That is so inside baseball. I know that. You know, to me, that is just like.
Well, you know what I think is personally, I'm surprised a little bit with Rubio as well. But I think what's really hindering Rubio is something that, you know, it needs to be talked about more is really the support breakdown between Bush and Rubio, at least initially with the establishment, is, you know, I think a lot of people with the establishment are being more loyal to Bush, whether they're doing publicly or not publicly, and that's holding some people back from Rubio that if Bush were not in the race, Rubio would have a stronger support base.
If Donald Trump ends up with a nomination or there turns out to be a brokered convention, I would blame the establishment, the big wig, the money people of the Republican Party, the Bush supporters. They're the ones that are creating this situation. Because if they were smart, they would have known real early in the game that that Jeb Bush ain't going to make it.
They're holding out.
And they would have pulled that money and they would have put it on a better horse. And either that horse would have been Rubio or Kasich or somebody else or Christie, probably Rubio. But they didn't do it.
But it's not. Look, this is not about the money versus not money. This is about. I have to agree with Doug. Marco Rubio is a lightweight, and there's a quality about him that comes across as a lightweight. And, you know, you could see it during the disastrous State of the Union response when he lurched for the water. And he's not, you know, Barack Obama and Marco Rubio were very similar, and people were calling, you know, Rubio as the Republicans Obama. But Barack conveyed a gravitas. You might think he's a lightweight, and that's fine, but he conveys a gravitas. He puts on a better air. Marco Rubio just doesn't.
I agree.
Is he trying too hard?
Is he trying too hard?
I don't know. I think he's not ready for prime time. And so every candidate has a chance. There's that moment in the sun, and they either rise or they fall. Ben Carson, he rose, and then the sun really shone hard, and then he plummeted.
But again, I think he'll be out very soon. In Rubio's case, what Amara said is, in all the debates, I mean, in my view, Rubio did well in all of the debates.
Absolutely.
Carly Fiorina did well in the first two, but then even when the debate's over, she doesn't take off.
Right.
But he is still talked about as the guy that's out there, but the guy that seems to at least have some momentum in New Hampshire now is a guy who I think there's no way in the world he's going to be president.
It's Chris Christie.
And that's Chris Christie.
Yeah.
And yet he may be hot in New Hampshire.
I was just going to make a point that, I agree that Rubio does not have the gravitas that these other candidates, but some lightweights that have become president that weren't seen as John F. Kennedy, as you've already mentioned, Barack Obama was considered a lightweight, and he did win the presidency.
George W. Bush.
So
yes.
It can happen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But Donald Trump sucks the oxygen out of the Republican primary. He's the focus. He's, again, I've said, masterful at this. And so somebody really has to rise. And right now, when you have a state like New Hampshire, you have the opportunity to do retail politics. Chris Christie is rising in New Hampshire because of the retail politics.
I think part of it also, and again, I've talked a couple of weeks ago about, you know, I didn't think that Christie would be elected because he's too fat. And I can say that because I'm overweight. I'm overfat. And I don't think the American people want someone who looks like that to be their president. And I would say that to some extent, on a different side, is I think at the moment in this tough world we're in, on one hand, when you've got Donald Trump, who's very tall, and Donald Trump is attractive and articulate, you've got him. He looks like a leader. Marco Rubio, because of his demeanor, he's also relatively short, and he looks so young. He doesn't have the physical gravitas, and he's also, I mean, he's an attractive man. And sometimes maybe you look too good, and because
it's hurt me my whole life.
If you look too good, people don't think you're real smart. I mean, I hate to say that.
One thing there in Saturday Night Live is Rubio is the only one that you would swipe right.
He always just said, I'm a seven. But again, I think, you know, we're getting beyond, you know, issues here, but I think it's how people connect and how people feel. But there's something about Rubio that's just not developing at the moment. Back shortly. You may disagree. Call me.
Excuse me, Chad. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and we're going to switch gears and talk a little bit about the Democrats. But Doug has got a pet topic that you want to put on the table.
You mean Dave?
Dave. I'm sorry, Dave.
No, I want to recognize the fact that armed insurrectionists have taken over a federal installation in the state of Oregon right now. And there's a hot debate over whether these people are armed insurrectionists or peaceful protesters. Okay, we know they're armed, folks, this is related to the Clive and Bundy land dispute, although the reason they're supposedly doing this is because of a couple of guys who were in jail over burning several hundred acres or thousand acres or million acres, then they got sentenced back to jail. Anyway, it's a hotly controversial issue, but you literally have armed insurrectionists who've taken over a federal installation, and it's not even on the top of the news. It wasn't even in the news. It wasn't even on any of the news shows this morning. I could not help but think, what if those people were Muslim? What if those people were black? What if those people were angry students who had, you know, armed themselves to the teeth and taken over this installation and have vowed to declare this will be a safe haven for anyone who does not recognize federal authority? Meanwhile, they're all holding their copies of the Constitution.
Story. I mean, the story was just breaking. You said it wasn't on the morning shows, but I mean, wasn't it just breaking today?
Yeah, last night.
I mean, it's going to be a huge story. These people are nuts. They're not. So they just be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, of course. I mean,
one would think.
No argument on that.
Well, except that the Obama administration had been afraid of having another Waco situation and so had declined to take over Clive and Bundy's land, even though he was defying federal authorities. And so the question is, how far can they push it? And now that they've armed, they're occupying this facility.
The president has announced that this week he is going to be perhaps issuing some executive orders that are going to sort of tighten gun legislation that he thinks that Congress has not acted on. Is that going to be another feather in his cap that he's going to appease his liberal constituency and maybe be something that's going to be thrown out of court, Amira?
It will be a feather in his cap in the sense that over both of his terms, we've had so many mass shootings, we've had so many tragedies that are tied back to gun violence, and the inability to do something about gun control on his agenda, I think, has always been a soft spot and a sore spot for the president. So I think these executive orders are going to be something that he wants to, at least he wants to say, this happened.
How do you respond to those listening around the country who have heard the stories of the shootings in Chicago, which are just they're epidemic of in proportion, and yet they also know that Chicago has one of the strongest gun laws in the United States? So why does that happen in Chicago? What's wrong?
Well,
the people that have the guns are not following the laws.
Well, the issue is really the issue of violence is so much deeper than the methods that we use to address it. So, for example, in my opinion, I don't think that violence is something that can be solved by having more police. I think it is an economic issue. I think there are social issues that underlie violence as a symptom. And so we have to ask the question, when someone picks up a gun to shoot someone, you have to get to, if you want to reduce violence, you have to get to the mindset of the individual who picked up the gun. And then there are just other things that with strengthening local gun laws, but I think it's something that Chicago has consistently struggled with, but we're not really getting to the root cause of gun violence. We're really doing what I think are more band-aid measures to address it.
Do you think the broader discussion of gun violence and gun laws is a diversion from the more significant, deeper issues that you've just referenced?
I certainly think it is, because the hard work is actually addressing the root causes of violence, and that it takes time. It's not something that's going to garner headlines. It's not something that's easy for an administration to hang their hat on. And for that reason, from under Daley and continuing under the current mayor, we've not really addressed the issue.
Dave?
Yeah, I think it's very important to address this question about, well, we have strong local gun laws in Chicago, and therefore gun control doesn't work. We do not have a fence around our city. We get guns from Indiana, from Arkansas, from neighboring states, from neighboring areas. Mm-hmm. The problem that we have here, and you ask federal prosecutors and they will tell you precisely this, is that you can't just have isolated strong laws in a municipality and ignore what's happening in the neighboring areas. And so what the president is I believe going to do is going to be addressing the gun show loophole and probably the terrorist watch list, the fact that mm-hmm. a terrorist can, or somebody who's on the watch list, and I know there's errors in it, but somebody who's on the watch list can buy a gun with no additional scrutiny whatsoever, because you're not allowed to look at the terrorist watch list as part of the, mm-hmm. the background checks. So I think he's going to address those issues, which frankly should be the kind of thing that people can agree on. But unfortunately, our politics on guns has gone so far the wrong
direction. But the issues in Chicago and in every major urban areas, as Amira has said, it is about a lack of opportunity, a lack of respect for authority, a lack of respect for other people's lives that exists in lower socioeconomic areas around the country. Not exclusively black. In major areas, it's primarily African American. In other areas, it could be Hispanics. It could be Appalachian whites. It gets to a lack of understanding and respect for life.
It does.
And the ease of guns, in other words, if you could get rid of every gun, you still would have some violence that would be take place because people think that violence is the answer.
Precisely. All of the things that you mentioned speak to, again, the multifaceted nature of violence in communities. And so regardless of the race of the individuals involved, when you have the confluence of factors, poverty, unemployment, unstable communities that have been destabilized for generations, you have conditions where violence is more likely to occur. Lack of access to mental health services. And that's a huge issue that we're seeing now in the city of Chicago. But again, the unwillingness and inability to address violence from a public policy standpoint with the real things that will address violence, as opposed to the things that the mayor can tout or any politician can tout in a press conference or in a press release, that is why the violence it persists.
Amari, you can find common ground with Donald Trump. One of his big things he's talking about on the gun issue is that we've got to do more on the mental health side. Much more has to be done. He's also pointed out that I didn't realize this, but haven't seen a lot of people talking about it. But that local governments and municipalities are doing a poor job of updating the databases for criminal and mental issues. And so when the background check is done, when somebody's buying a gun, the point is that the current law is not being effectively enforced.
Definitely.
Nick, I just wanted to add, I do agree that there are things that need to be done regarding our gun laws nationally, similar to what Dave was saying. In one state, the laws can be one way. You go somewhere else, and there needs to be looked at. But I want to make a comment that I think that President Obama, and I've said this before, is that I think he is tying gun control legislation or gun control action with terrorism, and I don't think that they're in the same necessarily in the same bailiwick, because we're talking about specific issues of gun violence, particularly in the area of Chicago, and there are certain things like getting rid of the weapons that have lots of artillery power that could be done, but as we look at what's happened in these incidents, a lot of this has happened under current gun, current laws.
He also hasn't said much about the violence in Chicago, and there's a lot of people very upset
Very quiet, conspicuously quiet, yes, on the issue of gun violence in Chicago. Even the most recent incidences, he's really not said very much. And I think that speaks probably to the political nature of the city's leadership and his relationship with the city's leadership. And I think it's unfortunate. He can use what's happening in Chicago as an opportunity to really push what he wants to do nationally.
I want to ask this question for people around the country. You may not know, there have been daily demonstrations, almost daily demonstrations, by primarily the African-American community, but not exclusively African-Americans, in the streets of Chicago following the death of Laquan McDonald at the hands of an officer who shot him 16 times. And there isn't any reason to believe that that was not murder, but a judge and a jury will decide that. Is it because he's afraid of Rahm Emanuel and all the yelling? They want Rahm Emanuel, the mayor, to step down and resign. Do you think there's any chance that could happen? Is there any pressure point that could make Rahm step aside?
The only pressure point that makes the mayor step aside is if the National Democratic Party or Hillary Clinton herself says that he has become a liability and he should therefore step aside.
Do you think he is?
I think he could be a liability if, for example, Bernie Sanders takes advantage to draw the connection between the mayor and the Clintons and the policies from the Clintons that have adversely affected the African-American community and many other things. I think that even the Sanders campaign hasn't really leveraged it to where it could put the kind of pressure on Hillary to pull Rahm's coat and say, maybe you want to step aside.
Dave?
Yeah, I think there's almost zero chance that he steps aside. And I think it's worth noting, Bruce, that the demonstrations that have taken place are very, very, very small.
That's my sense.
Dozens.
Yeah. Right.
And so I think that when this horrific, horrific video came out, and when the mayor's initial response was, shall we say, less than artful and effective on
right.
this.
And a lot of emails.
The initial response was more about self-preservation and less about we have a crisis in our city. But when that happened, there were a lot of eyes in City Hall that were watching to see what happened with our city. Were there going to be enormous demonstrations? Was there going to be rioting in the streets? There was no rioting in the streets,
right,
and the largest demonstration we've had so far had 1,000 people. And that's just not the kind of pressure that it's going to take in order
to. In front
of
his house, I think last week it was
two dozen.
I don't like being in the uncomfortable position of defending Rahm Emanuel, but it's not all his responsibility. I mean, they did get rid of the chief of police, right? Alvarez is probably going to be overthrown in the election next year. But also this
state's attorney.
The Chicago police union. I mean, my understanding is they couldn't have fired that. They took him off.
Right,
straight to it.
We got to go. 1-800-723-8209. Back shortly from Chicago.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair, see Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King. Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back. We continue in Chicago, and we're going to talk about the Democrats for a while. And let's talk about, is there a way that Bernie Sanders can overtake Hillary Clinton? Dave Lundy.
No.
Amira, do you agree with that?
I agree. I'm hesitating. I think it would be very, very difficult.
Why is he afraid to really go for the jugular and go after her? I mean, that's what it takes. I mean, we're seeing what Donald Trump does in the Republican. That's how you win a campaign or win an election. He doesn't seem to be willing to do that.
It seems that, and I've had the opportunity to sit with him in a roundtable about a week ago, where he gave his usual speech about, you know, his issues, economic inequality and those sorts of things. But I think the difference is perhaps, are you in this to win or are you in this to make a point? And from what I can see now, months into campaign season, it seems that he's more in this to make a point as opposed to really winning.
See, I think that – I'm sorry. I think that's exactly it. You have hit the nail on the head. Bernie Sanders never believed he was going to win this nomination, and he still doesn't believe he's going to win the nomination. And he, even though he's ironically, since he's not actually a Democrat, he's an independent Democratic Socialist and has never identified with the Democratic Party, but he does not want to hurt the nominee of the Democratic Party by going after her in a way that he could. And to your point, Bruce, what a Donald Trump would do if he was serious about winning it. I don't think Bernie, at 75 years old, truly believes he's going to be the next president of the United States.
This is really fascinating because on the Republican side, if a candidate won New Hampshire, you're in contention. You're a contender. And Bernie Sanders could win New Hampshire. Isn't he ahead there in the polls?
He could have two in a row. Conceivably, he could have two in a row. Now, when he heads to South Carolina, I think his campaign really goes south. But, you know, you never really know. No. You never really know.
You don't. And I think I was going to make a point of just, you know, maybe he – we don't know what's in his mind, but well, maybe some people do. But I think he – it's more of his style. He comes from a different cloth of politicians where, you know, he's about issues and he's – I don't see him – but I don't see him attacking her in that sort of way. I think he tends to be – he makes his point and you agree with him or you don't agree with him, but I don't see him ripping people
off. When he dropped the email scandal, I mean, I thought that was a big blunder if he was serious about winning.
There are things that he can do that don't have to be attacking her in a very – in a negative way. There are distinctions that he can draw, even policy distinctions that he can draw that he can tie to both Hillary and her
husband. Okay. If everyone who has been – if these hundreds of thousands of people that have been to these rallies all over the country for Bernie Sanders – believe or have heard what you have just said, that he wasn't really trying hard enough, he didn't really think he was going to win, and yet they went out there, they're all jacked up, okay? Now Hillary wins the primary, okay? Hillary goes to the convention. She's at her convention. The question is, do all those people, do they all go out and enthusiastically support her? I say no. I say that when you look at the core Democratic constituency, there's a percentage of young people who are for Bernie Sanders, who are not going to support Hillary Clinton. They're not going to go over to the Republicans.
Well, so I think someone will vote for Trump. Not the true Marxist-Leninist ones, but I think some of the Bernie Sanders people will vote for Trump. I really do.
The one thing that they agree on is Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders both oppose the war in Iraq. I mean, he could make the same case
and campaign finance reform. Huh? They're both in favor
of campaign finance reform. And some of the rhetoric, some of the stuff about the corporations and the hedge funds.
And they're both not non-establishment candidates, and that I think is very attractive.
They are touching the same nerve that's out there, I think, including the biggest nerve is they're touching nerves of people who have traditionally not voted.
But here's how I see this playing out, because I think that you're right. There are going to be some. And I would argue that it's a relatively small number of folks, of young folks, who are just going to go say, you know what, to hell with this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go. I'm not going to bother. There's no difference between them. But I think what happens is that Bernie Sanders comes out once Hillary secures the nomination at the convention, and he tries to rally his troops and say, look, you may not like everything that she's done. I may not like everything that she's done, but compare her to the alternative. Because remember, at the end of the day, the American system is not a parliamentary democracy. The American system is about you versus somebody else. And in this case, the somebody else, and whether it's Trump or Cruz, I think that the Democrats will have the ability to engender fear of the other, which is a motivator.
But I also think another factor that we're not taking into account is the Green Party and Jill Stein. And a lot of the people who would support Bernie Sanders might normally actually go for the Green Party candidate as opposed to either crossing
perhaps
over or
staying
out.
But every candidate is supposed to come out and bear the standard of the party if they don't win the nomination. And I don't think that translates into the energy. Bernie has certainly created an energy. And again, Bruce made a point about among voters, people who wouldn't typically vote. And I think there's a fall off there. Some may go to Trump, some may, but I think there's a fall off.
I think
the
bigger issue also, and this gets back to, Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, Black Lives Matter. It gets back to police brutality. It gets back to what Hillary Clinton says about that issue. I think everyone at this table would agree that Hillary Clinton is not going to get the 90% plus support that Barack Obama got in the black community.
She certainly won't.
Is there going to be a significant drop off for her?
In a general election?
In a general election.
Oh, no. She absolutely will get 90% plus. Absolutely.
You think she'll get this? Or
I don't know. I don't know that she would, because I don't see the enthusiasm there for her. I mean, one of the large conversations that's happening when we talk about mass incarceration and Bill Clinton's record as it relates to mass incarceration at the rates that we're seeing today, precisely. And I think that is going to hurt her, at least with black voters. And that's in addition to all of the things that are happening around police misconduct now. And unfortunately, Bernie Sanders hasn't capitalized on any of that.
He's the father of three strikes.
I can't pretend to speak like an expert like Amar can on this issue, but based on my anecdotal, limited experience of getting petitions for Donald Trump and talking to folks in the 7th District here, right around where we are now, not all, but I was very surprised with some of the black folks who were very eager to sign the petition. They're saying they weren't saying that they would definitely vote for him. But they said they like some of the things they have to say. I think his appeal to economic development, economic opportunity, I think resonates in the black community. Tell me I'm wrong.
Donald Trump has more appeal of the Republican field. Donald Trump has more appeal to African American voters than I think any other buddy in the field.
I think his ability to be plain spoken, I think it also resonates with African American voters. I think that he has opened a door where they're at least considering him. But I also want to parallel that with Bruce Rauner from Illinois. And he also was able to win a lot of support because he was anti-establishment. He represented a departure from the status quo. And I think for that reason, he also got a lot of support from the African American community. So it might be some validity.
At the end of the day, when you look at these national elections and for Governor Rauner, I think at the end of the day his percentage of the black vote was something under 10. The question is not are they going to get a large percentage. I think Hillary will still get 90% plus, but there will be a lot of people who stay home. Who just don't come
that's
out
exactly
and
it.
Vote. And that's where the danger is.
And what happens if a large percentage of those people stay home, but Trump is able to get a lot of people who don't typically vote, which he has been able to do,
so
to get out and vote? That's where I see the danger.
Well, we don't
Hillary
know that. And this is really the open question. And Doug doesn't know any more than I do. And we're going to find out in Iowa and New Hampshire. You think that his percentage may be understated by these polls. I know some people think their percentage may be overstated. I think you're more likely to be correct than they are. But we'll see if these people actually vote. They're not just angry, but they actually will show up and vote. And I just don't know.
The biggest fear of political parties, regardless of the party, the biggest fear is a massive turnout where a lot of people vote and no one knows what the heck is going to go on.
Right.
They have lost control. It isn't just running your numbers and running your people. There's people showing up at the polls, and you don't know how they're going to vote. That is scary to Republicans and Democrats.
Well, and look at what happened in Ohio in 2004. In Ohio in 2004, John Kerry lost the presidency, and he lost the state of Ohio because Karl Rove had put a gay marriage a ballot initiative on the ballot.
Right.
And it turned out an enormous number of Christian conservatives. You ask a Kerry people, they will tell you they met their numbers. They met their objective numbers in Ohio, yep. And yet they lost the state by like 60,000 votes.
Right.
And it was because of that ballot initiative. So, yes, there's a wild card, big question marks. And
last time, people, you know, part of the analysis of Mitt Romney was a lot of conservatives stayed home. I mean, you know, yeah,
that is true. He
had a big drop off.
Low energy.
And I also think that's one of the concerns that I think, Trump has is that he may be bringing in people that have never voted before. But again, some of that core Republican vote, which I described as that 45%, I think he's lost those. I mean, I think there's suburban Republican women. There's no way in the world they're going to vote for Donald Trump.
I don't think
they may hold their nose and vote for Hillary Clinton, or they may not hold their nose. They may just vote for Hillary Clinton.
He's got time to win them over.
I don't know about that. I don't know whether there's enough time left for that. Does anybody
agree
with that?
Spends a lot of time on that.
Yeah.
Look at the crowds he's getting. I've never seen anything like this.
Everybody has seen the crowds that he gets. Everyone has seen the crowds that Bernie Sanders gets. And
they don't really compare anymore.
The common denominator is these are two people that are saying things. They're saying things that are hitting people's nerves. They're things that they're not used to saying. And you look at the also-rans. The also-rans are playing by yesterday's game book. And again, their position in the polls shows exactly where they are. Listen, thanks for joining us. We'll continue shortly.
Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amling's now at 888-880-TREE.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com. Oh, we continue our conversation in Chicago. We were just commiserating about who is the next likely to drop out. Let's go right around the table. Starting, you don't think Donald Trump's going to drop out. So tell me who you think, Doug Ibenthal, you're Trumpers. Who do you think
drops out? Who should or who will?
Well, should. Who you think
Jeb
should?
Jeb Bush should. Carly Fiorina. I think Carly Fiorina. Who are we forgetting?
Rand Paul.
Santorum.
Rick Santorum.
The late Rick Santorum.
Santorum may... I think Santorum may have something to the debate. Huckabee will be out after the caucuses, no doubt.
Nick, who do you think?
Does Rand Paul have to make a decision soon to whether he's going to run for Senate, right?
He's got till March.
No, he's got till March.
But I think Rand Paul, I mean, I saw him today on Meet the Press, and it seems like
he's not
doing
a guy going
anything.
Through the motions. Yeah. He was like asleep.
I mean, there's several other ones that will probably be with him, but top of my list is Rand Paul.
I would say Huckabee and Rand Paul I didn't even think about, but Huckabee and Fiorina.
I think if Ben Carson comes in fourth in Iowa, he's done.
Is there – do you see them, those that drop out, do you see them gravitating to one particular person? Do they become part of the let's put Trump over the top? I don't think so.
I think
do they become part of the Stop Trump movement? And is Cruz considered part of the Stop Trump movement? Because I think the establishment is more upset and would be more concerned with Ted Cruz than they would with Donald Trump.
I completely agree with that. They're apoplectic. The Republican establishment are apoplectic. If their choice is between Trump and Cruz, you know, the emigration.
They know they can make a deal with Trump.
Right.
They will not be able to make a deal with Ted
No,
Cruz.
They will not be able to make a deal
Nor
with
will
Ted
anybody.
Cruz. As a Democrat, I'm looking going, really? This is it? You guys are going to nominate either Trump or Cruz? This is just an amazing thing to behold. Ted Cruz is the single most hated man in the United States Congress. Period, full stop.
But in the United States Congress, that a vast majority of the people loathe right now.
Sure.
I find it interesting when I am not sure who would be worse as president, and I'm actually leaning toward Ted Cruz being worse. For the very fact that he is unable to get along with anyone, he has personality characteristics that seem to rub people the wrong way. He's done things that have shown, to me, just a tone deafness that I think is dangerous, quite frankly. And for him to be so close to being the nominee is frightening.
Wow, you guys remember, right, that your front runner is under federal criminal investigation for some pretty possibly serious crimes. Really?
Ted Cruz
But she gets along with some people.
At least some people, and has a track record. Ted Cruz hasn't gotten along with anyone on the other side of the aisle or anyone on his side.
Well, Ted Cruz is not my guy. I mean,
would you agree with that? That's probably the most serious denunciation of Ted Cruz we've had on this program.
Well, I think, you know, there's two faces of Ted Cruz. I mean, I would agree that he doesn't get along with folks. But at least personally, I know from people that work closely with him that he's actually has a different – it's kind of like, you know, people talked about Bob Dole and how friendly he was after the race. I think when you interact with him, he's very friendly. And whether that transcends into voters and his ability when he's at events, you know, maybe we see something that –
I don't know. I have a cousin who was clerked for Rehnquist, and all the Rehnquist clerks tend to hang out together. He said Cruz is hated among all of those clerks.
Oh, that's the first time I've heard that. You're expanding that to his unpopularity to the judiciary now? I hadn't heard that.
No. I'm saying the clerks, the people who actually worked with him as a clerk, they hated him.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, he actually may have the highest IQ of anyone in the field, but he's not my guy. As opposed to Trump, Cruz is not really built anything. He's been an obstructor.
I'm going to turn that comment on background on Hillary Clinton. I mean, how many people have worked for Hillary Clinton that really love her? I mean, you know, there's some people that have, but there's some people that really hate her from a work environment. It just doesn't hit the press.
Sure. I mean, I know a lot of people personally who would die for her, who would literally throw themselves in front of a bus for Hillary. It's I'm Foster. Not saying I would. I'm
Vince
just
Foster?
Saying that.
No.
But
that's an oldie but a goodie.
Yes, it is.
I agree. There's not people willing to die for Ted Cruz that I've seen. Maybe Bruce, you know him.
But it's fascinating.
Well, they probably are.
It is fascinating what, you know, we who really love the game of politics and we love watching the politicians and love seeing how this goes. You know, you've got the politicians who are just very happy to meet you and they're warm and they're fuzzy, the Dick Durbin types.
Yeah.
Love them or hate them, you know, everybody's warm to everybody. And then you've got the misanthropes. And you got the misanthropes like Richard Nixon, like Ted Cruz, like some would argue our mayor, who it's not about – they're not loved. They're not loved characters.
they
don't care. It's just not what they're about.
But there's a liability to that, hence what we're seeing in the city of Chicago. The many avoidable issues that could have been avoided, that could have been handled differently, as difficult as they are, that have been undercut because of that very characteristic.
Well, here's my point. If you – love gridlock. If you love gridlock, Ted Cruz is your guy. Mm-hmm. There will be.
Gridlock. But it's probably done.
And by the way, I think the big difference. This is why I think Ted Cruz is not electable, and I think Donald Trump is electable. I think part of it is personality, part of it is celebrity, and part of it is one is a populist, the other is an ideologue. I do not believe an ideologue can win the necessary electoral votes to become president of the United States at this moment in time in the world we live in, especially when they're in a contest with a populist.
Cruz, I think, has a problem. I mean, even if he wins Iowa, he's not going to do well in New Hampshire. I mean, I think everyone would agree with that. And then I don't know where he goes from there.
I think he doesn't have to do well in New Hampshire, frankly. He's got South Carolina, he's got all these March 1st states. He should be running like a runaway freight train on March 1st. If he's not doing it, then Trump's got it wrapped up, as I said a little bit earlier in the broadcast. I
mean, 133 delegates in Texas.
Yeah, no, and he's going to pick them up, you know, but obviously he's not beloved by everybody in Texas either, like the Bush family's not real wild about him either. But again, next week, we'll hear from people in Texas listening to us on KLBJ and KTSM in El Paso. You'll stand up and speak proudly for your junior senator. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for being with us tonight. See you next week.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Excuse me, Chad. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.